Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Do you think that the United States is at least partially responsible for this tragedy?
I think it is too soon to be drawing conclusions or assigning blame or responsibility.
Are you blaming the president in any way for the fact that it appears that Iran shot down that jetliner?
No, but I am saying that there would not be 176 people dead today. It all emanates from the killing of Soleimani.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
President Trump recklessly assassinated Qasem Soleimani, and we say that coming from a classified briefing where, again, there was no raw evidence presented that there was an imminent threat.
Secretary Pompeo, if I can, here today at the podium, you said that the imminent threat was a threat to U.S. embassies, but no one said it to lawmakers behind closed doors in a classified setting, as multiple senators have since said.
We did.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
Bernie and Nancy Pelosi, we have them all. They're all trying to say, how dare you take him out that way? You should get permission from Congress so that we can call up the fake news that's back there and we can leak it. Can you imagine calling crooked Adam Schiff? Listen, we have the world's number one terrorist. We got him lined up, Adam, you little pencil neck.
Unchained and unstoppable.
The light continues.
Very fake news.
The field shrinks again. The author and spiritual advisor, Marianne Williamson, announcing just moments ago she is suspending her campaign for president.
And so it is.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
I'm holding in my hand the envelope. Marianne Williamson, not going to make it. Carnack has spoken. There it is. Marianne Williamson. You know, it's always a bad sign when you lay off the entire campaign staff and then you say, all three of them in her case, and then you say, I'm going to continue. And that was, what, 2 days ago? And now she's not going to continue. So there you go. 844-500-4242. If you didn't hear, too, there's a story out today. The fake Indians' chances of being the Democrat nominee are down to 12%. 1 in 8 chance. And in other words, she has about as good as... I was going to try to think of one of the teams that's still in the NFL playoffs that has a better, less of a chance than 12% of going to the Super Bowl. I don't think there are any. All right. Didn't she say love wins? Wasn't that one of her sayings? Do we have some of her sayings? Someone just texted in that I guess love loses. I guess, yeah, she said love did not prevail in this case. So she's out. And 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242, that is the toll-free number of the Howie Carr Show if you'd like to join us here this afternoon, every weekday afternoon. You know, last night in Toledo, Ohio, I was just listening to the intro there, and I'm glad Taylor put it in, the reference to Adam Schiff's neck size. Have you ever heard a presidential or a politician refer to one of his opponents' neck sizes? He said he buys nine inch collars, and they're still too big for him. It just cracked me up. These speeches are always hilarious. Let's just play cut. We've got a lot going on here today. We've got police blotter, Facts Friday. We've got an interview with the Secretary of Energy at 3:30, which is good, I think, because the president has been talking this week about energy independence, and I just want to run some numbers by the Energy Secretary. Brulette is his name. And, you know, because some people say, I know that the United States is overall the leading producer of energy in the world. However, I don't know that we're totally oil independent of the Mideast. I think we still may need some energy, some oil from the Middle East. I know we export a ton of natural gas and other fuels, but we may not have enough oil for our own domestic needs. I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to find that out very shortly. 844-500-4242. 207 says, remember the Democrat superdelegates could turn this thing on its head. Well, the same handicapping odds that were issued that said Elizabeth Warren has a 1 in 8 chance of winning the nomination, I think the odds are slightly better. I think they're like 13-14% that there's going to be a second ballot at the convention. And as we pointed out over and over again, I don't think there's been a second ballot at either national party convention for the last 70 or 80 years. It just doesn't happen anymore. But, you know, if it's ever going to happen, it seems like this would be the year that it would happen. Someone says the Vikings would be the low team on the totem pole. I don't know. The thing is, I'm not a big Vikings fan, but when Speaker Pelosi was saying yesterday that she couldn't go to the 49ers game because she was too busy saving the country, I suddenly became a Vikings fan in that game tomorrow. I just, again, I don't dislike the 49ers, and I probably would sort of naturally be for them, but not now. Now, if it makes Nancy Pelosi sad, I got to be with the Vikings. 844-500-4242. But I want to play one cut here. This is from the rally last night in Toledo. And again, Trump has so much fun with these people. It's just too good. Cut eight.
Where's Hunter? Where is Hunter? No, I went to one of them. I said, we have to have Where's Hunter as a witness. They said, what do you mean, where's Hunter? I said, that's his first name. I have now made his first name Where's. Where's Hunter?
Oh, God. Cut number nine.
So where's Hunter? Where the hell are you, Hunter? But I'll tell you, I sort of hope it's Joe, because he will hear Where's Hunter every single debate, nine times a debate.
Did you just see the president walking around behind Biden like he walked around behind Hillary at that quote-unquote town hall debate in St. Louis right before the election? And he'd just be like looking up and down and all around and, if there was a rug, turning up the rug and looking to see if Hunter was hiding under the rug. The other thing is today, I don't know if you saw this, they announced the new sanctions on Iran today. The Secretary of State, Pompeo, and Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, were up there. And so they were playing dictionary games, the press. And the word of the day, saying the magic word and the duck comes down as Groucho Marx used to say, today the magic word that the duck would come down was imminent. Imminent. Because they've been saying there was an imminent threat of an attack. And remember that George Bush was criticized because they supposedly had reports that there was going to be an attack on 9/11 and nobody did anything. So he was attacked for many years about that. So now Trump has decided he doesn't want to be accused of not paying attention to military or counterintelligence. And so he makes the effort to take a counterstrike against the terrorists before they can do anything. And he's criticized. And they want to know, what does imminent mean? What does imminent mean? Cut number 10.
Secretary Pompeo, what is your definition of imminent?
This was going to happen, and American lives were at risk. And we would have been culpably negligent, as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said, we would have been culpably negligent had we not recommended to the president that he take this action in Qasem Soleimani. He made the right call, and America is safer as a result of that.
That's a pretty good definition of imminent. Okay, let's ask it, but he gets asked it again. Cut 11.
The administration said this strike was done based on an imminent threat. But this morning, you said we didn't know precisely when and we didn't know precisely where. That's not the definition of imminent. The president has also suggested that there was some sort of attack being planned against an embassy, perhaps several embassies. Can you clarify? Did you have specific information about an imminent threat, and did it have anything to do with our embassies?
We had specific information on an imminent threat, and those threat stream included attacks on U.S. embassies. Period. Full stop.
So you were mistaken when you said you didn't know precisely when and you didn't know precisely
where. Nope. Completely true. Those are completely consistent thoughts. I don't know exactly which minute. We don't know exactly which day it would have been executed, but it was very clear. Qasem Soleimani himself was plotting a broad, large-scale attack against American interests, and those attacks were imminent.
Against an embassy.
Against American facilities, including American embassies, military bases, American facilities throughout the region.
Do you ever really know when something's going to happen? I mean, they go back to the NFL games tomorrow. Someone's going to throw a touchdown pass, but you don't know exactly when it's going to happen, do you? I mean, come on. What do they want here? These are just gotcha questions. I mean, if somebody said, what does imminent mean to you? And you knew they were asking the question in good faith so they could write a more precise lead to their news story, that would be one thing. But then this is just a way to play gotcha with Trump's people again. Lord, I mean, they just 617 says, what? Listen to the indignation. Yeah, they're angry Democrats with press passes asking these questions. What does imminent mean? Can you tell us, Mr. Secretary, if there was any specific targets or any specific time frame? What does imminent mean? It's just like listening to Kerry last night defending the savages, the Iranian savages, about how they can't trust the Americans. And if, as he's saying this, you know, there might as well have been a split screen of the Iranians lying about we didn't shoot down the Ukrainian airline. No, we're going to have a full investigation. That's why we've got the bulldozers out, pushing dirt over all of the wreckage of the aircraft, because we're having a full investigation, and it was mechanical failure and had nothing to do with that SAM missile we fired. But the Iranians couldn't trust the Americans because we don't tell the truth, you know. 844-500-42. I'm Howie Carr.
He's the guru of graft. It's Howie Carr.
This is Deb in Danielson, Connecticut.
This is Greg in Boston, Mass.
This is Elizabeth in Wakefield, Massachusetts, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
Don't the American people have a right to know what specifically was targeted without revealing methods and sources?
Well, I don't think so, but we will tell you that probably it was going to be the embassy in Baghdad.
Did they have large-scale attacks planned for other embassies? And if those were planned, why can't we reveal that to the American people? Wouldn't that help case?
I can reveal that I believe it would have been four embassies.
Okay, so there it is. All right, 844-500-4242. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. Go to Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. I trusted Perfect Smiles with my smile, and so did the mailroom manager. And look at us now. PerfectSmiles.com. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Should Ashin the Fonz Fonzie have been fired as director of sustainability at Babson College?
You know, again, if this were in like a vacuum, this is, we were in sort of normal pre-Trump times, I would say Probably not. But, you know, these people like the Fonz are into cancel culture. You know, they're just a lynch mob looking for another victim. And it's about time they got a taste of their own medicine. So, yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, he should have been fired.
Either way, I think he should have been fired. I mean, you're pointing out sites that you think should be bombed, no matter who's the president. That's just sick. 86% say, yeah, he should have been fired.
Yeah, I don't think too many. You know, I don't know. I could see him becoming a martyr to the woke community. Although I don't think the Globe even did a story about it today, did they? I don't know. I saw Turtle Boy is the one who broke the story, and he said, you know, he kind of feels sorry for the guy, but on the other hand, if the roles had been reversed, that he's sure that the Fonz would have been demanding his head on a platter, which I think is true, right? So it's hard to lose a lot of sleep over. Perhaps, though, Taylor, someone should start a GoFundMe page to get him airfare to Tehran so that he could, you know, join up in the Quds force. You know, if he loves the mullahs this much, you know, and wants to help them out, I mean, I you know, who are we to stand in his way? And he's got a lot of free time now.
Wouldn't we maybe eventually have to fly him coach just like Soleimani?
I think that's the way it's going to end for most of the Quds force. Yeah, there's only 3,000, maybe as few as 3,000 to 15,000. 844-500-4242. Walter, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Walter.
Good afternoon, Howie. I have a theory of how Trump has handled this whole situation and what really happened. So anyway, Trump's way smarter than any of us realize, because Iran responds with this weak, like, backhanded official response by missing, you know, our military members. However, 2 hours later, they shoot down a Ukrainian plane, which, in their mind, I'm sure, thought Trump would respond heavy-handedly. So at that point, they were counting on their allies in Congress and the American media to say, look, there's your quid pro quo. He responded so heavily our weak attack.
But I think it's more like I don't think that the Iranians shot the plane down on purpose. They're just incompetent, and they were spooked. But the fact remains, Walter, that you just heard the cuts in the intro, and we've got more. They're blaming Trump for the fact that it's almost like he flew over to Tehran and got into the anti-aircraft batteries and shot down the plane. You know, I mean, that's practically what they're saying. They're blaming everything on him.
Because that's the only thing, that's the only talking point they have now. But imagine if he had responded, you know, with a heavy hand.
Right.
They would be saying, there's your evidence of quid pro quo. You know, he responded so heavily on behalf of Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But he's, Pompeo said that he had spoken this morning to Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. And there weren't that many Ukrainians on the flight. It was mainly that flight. It was 170 people. Half of them were Iranians, and 60 some were Canadians. That's why Trudeau is involved in this. And of course, the Canadian reporters are blaming Trump because they're Democrat operatives with press passes, too, even though they're members of the Liberal Party. I'm Howie Carr.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Joining us now on the news line is the Secretary of the Department of Energy, Dan Brulette. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He is a... He's from San Antonio, Texas. He's an Army veteran, and he's lived in Louisiana as well as Texas. And Secretary Brulette, thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show.
Thank you, Howard. It's great to be here today.
Well, I'm glad that you're on with us today, because we've been thinking about energy with all this Iranian news over the past few weeks. And a couple of days ago, the President of the United States again mentioned that we are now the world's leading producer of energy, and we're a net exporter of energy. And I just wanted to ask you a few questions, because I was kind of unclear on this. Now, are we self-sufficient in terms of oil and gasoline, fuel oil, that kind of thing? Or are we are we still reliant on some Mideast sources for oil?
No, Howie, again, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today. You know, what the president's referring to in terms of energy independence is not only the fact that we are now the world's largest producer of oil and the world's largest producer of gas. We're now larger than Russia, larger than Saudi Arabia. He's referring to the fact as well that we're now independent from the shackles that we faced, you know, two, three, four, five decades ago.
Right.
We're no longer shackled to the decisions of OPEC and those that would affect oil prices in a manner that would be contrary to the interest of the U.S. or the U.S. economy. So we're free from all of that. And we saw that again this week. The president was free to make a foreign policy decision that was in the interest of this country, was in the interest of the American people. And as a result, we saw literally no shock to the oil markets or gasoline prices here in the United States.
So, but what I'm saying is, you know, I know we export a lot of natural gas, but do we still need to import a little bit of oil? Is what I'm that's what I'm asking. Are we at all vulnerable if there was something like the oil embargoes of the 1970s?
No, not nearly like we were 40 years ago. We do in fact import some oil from around the world, but you know, I'll help explain why we do that. We have refineries in the United States that are set up to refine certain types of oil to produce certain types of refined product. And, you know, sometimes they use what's called sour or heavy crude. Sometimes
right.
they use light crude. And we don't have much heavy crude here in the United States. The oil that we produce here is a light sweet crude. So we do, in fact, import, but we export as well. So it's just a fundamentally different place for our economy to be in. And as a result, you know, we're not subject to the motives or the machinations of a world energy market like we used to be.
Right. I know, because we used to like the 73-74 oil embargo. I mean, we were relying on the Mideast for what, 30-40% of our oil supply, something like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as you mentioned, I grew up down in Louisiana, so. You know, I'm old enough to remember distinctly sitting in a gasoline line with my father asking the question, why in the world are we waiting in line for gasoline when we live in Louisiana that produces all of this oil and gas?
Yeah, there used to be bumper stickers, as I recall, let the Yankee SOBs freeze in the gas lines in the dark or something like that. Yeah,
I remember those
days, too. And I don't want to go back to those days. I was thinking about that. You know, they were the Iranians, you know, some of the media were saying, well, you know, they have these fast boats in their quote unquote Navy and they could block the Straits of Hormuz. Are the European nations and Japan, are they vulnerable to any kind of Iranian machinations in the Straits of Hormuz, or is this just all kind of in the past now?
No, they're actually more vulnerable than we are today. Countries that are heavily dependent upon imports, China, for instance, just to pick an example, China imports roughly 70% of the oil and gas that it uses in its country today, 70%. So that's so much higher than what we import here in the United States. So they obviously are much more at risk, if you will, from a closure in the Straits.
Yeah. Well, now, how much of the U.S. energy supply comes from the fracking that's going on federal lands? The reason I'm asking that question is, as you know, the Democrat candidates enthralled to the left-wing environmentalism, et cetera, they've been talking about stopping fracking on federally controlled lands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a great point, Howie. You know, fracking is a technology that was developed here at the U.S. Department of Energy and was taken to new heights by the private industry. George Mitchell, in particular, down in Houston, Texas, took this and deployed it much more efficiently, perhaps, than we could have ever thought of in a government agency. If you took that away, literally tens of thousands of energy jobs would go right out the window. And, you know, our ability to produce oil today through the use of these types of technologies is simply astounding. Our own Energy Information Administration here at the, you know, Department of Energy, EIA is what we refer to it, suggests that we're going to produce roughly 13 million barrels per day of crude oil in 2020. That's yet another record for U.S. production. The same thing with natural gas. You know, as you produce oil, sometimes you have gas that's associated with the production of oil. That technology has allowed that type of growth. And it's what has allowed us to become, as you pointed out earlier, a net oil exporter, a net energy exporter in 2020.
Barack Obama famously or infamously said, we can't drill our way out of this mess. But it appears from what you're saying, Secretary of Energy Brulette, that we have drilled our way out of this mess.
With all due respect, the former president was dead wrong.
And my understanding, too, is that some of these blue states, or at least a few of them, like, for instance, New York State, where Cuomo has said, the governor, that he won't allow any kind of fracking. If fracking were to be allowed in areas of the country where it currently is prohibited, we could be getting even more energy out of the ground, correct?
There's no question about that, Howie. New York sits, you know, at least partially within the confines of what we refer to as the Marcellus Shale Find. And, you know, if the technology were allowed to be used throughout the Marcellus Shale Find, we would be even more, producing even more energy out of that find. But I'll tell you, you know, the production numbers are very, very high today, and we're very excited about what we see in the energy space. One of our biggest challenges right at the moment, however, is not so much the production of energy, it's actually getting that product to market. And what we are focused on here in the administration and the Department of Energy in particular is the development of new infrastructure. The challenge in New York is really the development of pipelines so that we can get that clean natural gas up to your part of the world, you know, into the Northeast, into Boston, into Maine, and in those areas where, you know, there seems to be a desire for a cleaner form of energy production. And New York stands in the way. They won't allow a pipeline to be permitted.
Well, that's a whole other problem in New York. I mean, the governor has stopped the building of new natural gas pipelines to, say, I believe, Long Island and Westchester. And so the natural gas companies, haven't they shut off new customers? And then he threatened to sue the gas companies, even though he'd stopped them from getting in a new supply. I mean, and they wonder why people are moving out of New York State.
That's exactly right. They're moving for a number of reasons, but I can tell you another reason they're moving is because of high energy prices. You know, natural gas today is as cheap as it's ever been in my lifetime. I mean, it's roughly $2.50 or so for for one of the units of natural gas. That's cheap energy that would be available to the Northeast, and but for the actions of the governor of New York, they can't get access to it. So they're paying rates, electricity rates that are, you know, higher than they would have to pay ordinarily.
Yeah. And Pennsylvania, which has a Democrat governor but a Republican legislature, they're allowing fracking, and their economy is much healthier than New York's because they're getting all that money from energy that New York has given up, correct? Again, I'm just asking you these questions. I'm interested in this subject just from a standpoint of economics.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, you're not off base here at all, Howie. I mean, these are important economic drivers, if you will, either at the state economy level, the state level, or the federal level, and we're seeing that all across the country. I mean, you mentioned PA, just across the border from New York. Their economy is exploding. I have to tell you, you know, down in Texas, down in Louisiana, parts of the country where I grew up, keeping up with the amount of new investment down there has become next to impossible. And we have people coming not only from other parts of the United States to invest in export facilities, and, you know, for instance, in natural gas. We have other players. And I'll just tell you one quick story. The president was just down there a few months ago, visiting a facility that's going to be partially funded by Aramco, the state-owned oil company in Saudi Arabia. So think about the irony of that. You know, 40 years ago, we were dependent upon OPEC.
Right.
Saudi, as you know, is a very big player there. And now, today, we have the Saudis investing in energy in America because it's cheap, it's affordable, and it's a good place to do business.
What about this recent statements by the former Vice President Joe Biden that he would basically put the coal industry out of business? This is the same thing that Barack Obama and then Hillary Clinton said. What would be the consequences if ever a Democrat president were to try to shut down coal production in the U.S.?
Well, it would obviously be devastating to, you know, certain parts of the country. But, you know, let me tell you as well, it would be devastating to our national security. The president has taken a completely different approach. He directed us literally from day one. You know, former Secretary Rick Perry and I have been here since day one, and he directed the both of us at that point in time that we were going to pursue a policy that was what he referred to as all of the above. And what he meant by that was literally all of the above, which includes coal. Now, you'll hear from the, you know, previous administrations that they were all of the above as well, but they were all of the above except for coal. And, you know, our point of view is that this is an important resource that America owns. And for the provision of baseload electricity power in particular, it's a very important component. But I will also make one quick point to you about why coal is important. The development of rare earth elements and critical minerals, it is what drives the renewable energy industry. And we're learning today at the Department of Energy that we can actually derive some of these minerals, some of these elements, from coal. So to shut down that industry sort of cuts off our nose to spite our face. If you really believe in renewable energy, then you're going to want to develop battery technologies, and that's going to come from our ability to develop these minerals.
Electric power, what is that mainly generated by? Nuclear, coal, natural gas? What are the percentages, just generally?
Yeah, generally we produce about 20% of our electricity in the United States by nuclear energy. Natural gas is becoming a larger and larger portion of our electric generation. I don't know what the exact number is off the top of my head, but we have a very diverse portfolio. And as you might think about your financial portfolio, you tend to spread your investments over a pretty diverse selection of products. The same thing with energy. You want some nuclear, you want some coal, you want some gas, you want some renewable. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket.
Well, Secretary Brulette, I'm really happy that you were on the show, and I know you wanted to make some points about energy policy and the administration, but I'm very interested in these issues and energy dependence, especially because, like you, I remember as a younger man sitting in those gas lines, and I don't want them to ever come back. And I don't think anybody who ever sat in them wants them to come back either.
No, I agree. I think as long as we stay the course, Howie, the president's put us on a good path. And as long as we maintain this type of an approach to energy policy, those days are not coming back to the United States.
Dan Brulette, thanks for being with us. He's the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Energy. Thank you, Dan Brulette. I'm Howie Carr.
You can call him Fat Boy, just don't call him Late for Dinner. It's Howie Carr.
This is Paul in North Andover, Mass.
This is Luana in Lexington, Massachusetts.
This is Lauren in Augusta, Maine, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
844-500-4242. Elizabeth Warren apparently got heckled today in Dover, New Hampshire by an irate citizen who was saying that she was too easy on the Iranians and was looking the other way on terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. And she had no comeback. No comeback. I'm so happy to be here in Dover. How? You know, that's the thing. I was just doing my talking points. I'm going to be on Tucker Carlson tonight. And I was just writing about how she's faded away. And again, as I said in my column the other day, you can't out Bernie. And people, the left doesn't trust her. They think that she doesn't really believe any of this stuff that she's saying. I don't think she does. I mean, you know what would have happened if it had been Bernie and someone had had, shut up, you. Yeah.
It's time for you to leave. It's time for you to leave.
Are you a freak victim? Are you lying?
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. Hope you resign.
I hope you resign?
Yep.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said. We've got him. He's going to be on at 4:30, Howie.
Excellent. Excellent. How do we find out who he was, by the way?
Howie.
Yeah.
I got him on the phone, and I had no way to verify that it was him. And so he starts saying, well, it's me because my name's Michael and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just said to him, Michael, do me a favor. Put the phone a little bit away from your face and yell like you did today. And I'll try to see if the voices sound alike. And he goes, okay, he was game. He started yelling, and it was definitely him. It was the best verification I could do.
All right, good job, Grace. I look forward to speaking to him. So again, this is her problem. Nobody trusts her. I mean, the fact is, when she put out that first tweet after the terrorist Soleimani was killed, she said Soleimani was a murderer. He killed thousands of people, including hundreds of Americans. They just went through the roof. They don't want to hear that. They just want to hear what Bernie said. Trump's dangerous escalation. You know? And so now, you know, she gets attacked by a heckler for saying something for her later tweets, I guess we should say. And she has no answer because she didn't believe her later tweets any more than she believed her first tweet. We'll be right back. I'm Howie Carr.